Hello, hello, Walter Assey and Joanne Brackett is with you for this new edition of the Home Improvement Show. Walter Assey, of course, is the president of Renovco, and he is the man with the plan for all of your home renovation issues, your questions, your quandaries. Good morning.
Good morning.
We do want to say a big hello to our friends in Ottawa, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a very exciting show. As of today, we start airing in Ottawa.
CFRA 580, Dario. Yes, my producer just confirmed that. CFRA 580. So hello to our friends in Ottawa. And of course, hello to our friends.
My second home away from home. I love Ottawa.
You love Ottawa?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in Ottawa.
You just go for fun?
No, I haven't. We have offices in Ottawa, so
yeah. You're everywhere.
Yeah, that's right.
There's Pitbull, who's Mr. Worldwide,
and then there's you. I pick the areas I like, and Ottawa is one of the areas I really like.
There you go. So, Walter,
you get to a certain age, we can start picking and choosing, right?
That's true. And Walter Assey has reached that age. 514-790-0800. If you have questions for Walter, you can call us, of course. And that is the same phone number now for our text line, 514-790-0800. We have the answers to your questions. Hopefully, fingers crossed. I should say Walter has the answers to your questions. But before we get into the calls and the text messages, it was a messy week here in Montreal. There was, I mean, the flooding, the rain, the Dakari was covered in water. So immediately, as someone who's taking care of people's houses and their projects, what is your first thought when you see that amount of water?
I mean, from a from public works perspective, I think it's maybe high time that we find a long-term solution. Because
you mean for Dakari?
For us, Dakari. I mean, it's like you feel like you're pressing the rewind button all the time. It's happening over and over again. And to be honest, there's not much these people can do. They just get stuck in their cars and they go on the top. It's like
I asked Walter, like, what, is there a solution? Is there, if you're stuck in your car and the water starts coming in, and Walter's wisely said, get out of your car.
That's right. I mean, there's, you know, it happens over and over again. So we need to find long-term solutions simply because of global warming. We see that the weather patterns are changing. Let's not kid ourselves. The rainfalls are way more severe. We're becoming more Caribbean weather. If you know, it's in the summer. It's nothing that just we can call as a freak storm, because we are having them every year and we see the patterns changing. As far as the Ville Saint Laurent area, because that really got hit hard.
Yeah.
We're literally doing companies now, and I'm saying factories, big manufacturers, big businesses that got completely flooded. When I say completely, they had 3 and 4 feet of water in their whole operation.
Wow.
So I'm doing one that manufactures electric panels, as an example, out of many. And these guys, they have contracts with the governments. They have contracts all across the world.
Everything's
with deadlines
delayed now.
And penalties. So it's not like they had a part of their operation that got
affected.
Disturbed.
Yeah.
It's really the whole operation. And we're talking about this humongous building of 50,000 square feet that is completely submerged.
But Walter, my question is, so we know that this keeps happening every year. So from a building perspective, what can you do? Is there anything you can do?
So, I mean, this as an example, they have an anti-retour, they have a backflow valve. So they've done everything right from their end.
But
it's the city around it that did everything wrong. Unfortunately, all the sewer systems got overloaded.
Saw that.
And then, you know, it's really, the water that was coming in was really coming in from the street.
Wow.
So there's nothing that you could do in this case as a business owner or a homeowner except beg the city to be nice and, you know, do what they need to do.
Yeah, okay. We'll wait. We'll hold our breath. We won't hold our breaths waiting for that one. But let's talk about, in terms of the damage, when you get that much water into your building, this is, it's, you know, yeah, of course you have insurance for that and everything, but this is costly, right?
Well, it's costly on so many levels, and I'll tell you why. It's not just the physical damage and the material damage. It's the long-term damage. So in a case like this, if you're a business, you have no choice but to declare something called a clause called force majeure.
I love force. I don't love the name, but I love that. I don't love what it does, but force majeure sounds so beautiful. But it's usually a disaster.
It's usually a disaster. And what happens with this is that all your ongoing contracts typically get canceled because they have to go somewhere else to get it done. You're telling them, I can't get it done. And for good reason.
Wow.
I mean, these guys, all their machinery got submerged and everything else. So what happens is that means these guys are going to your competition, right?
And they'll stay there, and likely.
Maybe they'll stay there. Maybe a percentage of them will stay. So the long-term effect can never be quantified, right?
So the insurance will cover, I guess, the building, the brick and mortar, but the actual business you lose...
That's correct. That's not really something that's easily covered under insurance because you can't really quantify it.
No, you can't. And you always, the word you hate the most is the M word, mold. So is that to be expected in any kind? Anytime something like this happens, that's one of the biggest fears?
That starts almost immediately. In a case like this, because, I mean, you have 3-4 feet of dirty water. That's category 3 water.
Category 3?
That's
okay.
Right. So it's very contaminated water. So already, whatever just the water itself, whatever it's bringing in, between E. coli, bacteria.
Because it's from the sewers. The sewers backed up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, in a case like this, obviously you have to cut off all the wet materials, discard of them, and disinfect, do the structural drying, and so on and so forth. You have to take water damage seriously. You cannot look the other way. We see it happen way too often that people look the other way.
Mm.
And then, you know, they call you a couple of months after. They have mold, they have smell, they have issues, they have health issues. So do a little bit of research about it. Health Canada have a very nice section on their website about mold and the effects of mold and everything else. Just so you know what you're dealing with. I mean, if you want to stick your head in the sand, that's fine.
No.
But know what you're sticking your head in the sand for.
Or know what you're sticking your head into, really. And you just said something, category 3, and you said E. coli, and that's enough. That's enough for me. We've got some calls coming in. A reminder, 514-790-0800. That is the text line and the phone line. I see Bill and Ingrid waiting. We're going to get to you in just a bit. Welcome back, and we want to say a big hello to Ottawa because the Home Improvement Show, Walter, is now in Ottawa. I'm going to say hello to your Ottawa friends.
They love you so much, they wanted you there as well.
I beg to differ. I have not a lot to do with this. This is all you, Walter, but I'll take the compliment. We've got so many callers waiting. Ingrid has been patiently waiting. Ingrid is from Point Claire, Walter, and she has a question about water in her furnace. Good morning, Ingrid.
Hi, everybody. Hope everybody is well. Okay, I'm calling because it's the second time this has happened that I've had water at the bottom of the furnace, like under the fan. I took out like 20 buckets. So I guess it's not draining. A company came in maybe 2 years ago and they drained it and then they added a different pipe to go into a little water reservoir. But so I'm thinking there's something wrong with the tube. I can't get to it because it's like their two-part furnace. I guess it's on the right side, so it's like you can't get to the hose. So how do I go about this?
So, I mean, the reason this is happening is when you have a high-efficiency furnace, it releases what you call exhaust gases. Thus, condensation gets created, right? So that condensation becomes a significant amount of moisture and then it goes down that PVC pipe. And more likely than not, that PVC pipe gets clogged with time, either because it's not sloped adequately or because there's some debris of some kind that got in it. Now, that drain pipe that you have, is it in PVC? Is it in...
Yeah.
It's in PVC, right? Okay.
But what is strange, because I can't see it. It's on the right side, so that like panel's blocking it. But it's like about a foot and a half high. Like, it's not that the bottom of the reservoir or whatever this is called. So I don't know how it drains, you know, but it's higher up.
It's where the condensation gets formed and how it's drained from that point, right? So it's how the furnace is built. Whether it's high up, it doesn't matter. A lot of them have it high up. That's not an unusual thing because something must be blocked from the entry point and then backing up into the furnace and going to the floor of the furnace. So if you can get to it, I mean, it's very simple. You could just inspect it, like just unhook it, look at it inside, see if it's, because it's not usually a long pipe, right? See if it's blocked, and then if it is blocked, just simply pass some type of a fish in it to unblock it. If not, if it's really constricted and you can get to it, then what you need to do is to call a ventilation guy, a ventilation technician, and they will do that for you. But ensure that they maybe change the slope or do something around in order for this not to happen. Because if it's prone to block, that means there's something wrong in the installation to begin with. Technically, they're not supposed to block. There's not much debris, and there's not much coming out from there in order to create a blockage. So the only time we see this happen is when there is a bad installation, in the sense that there's not enough slope, or there's something that was not initially, you know, sometimes if it's a metal pipe like the old ones, these tend to block because they corrode from the inside and they rust. But in your case, if it's PVC, it should not be doing that.
Does that help you out, Ingrid?
Yeah, I think there's also a little piece of copper too, another little pipe.
Okay, anyway, so that might be part of the issue in this case.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ingrid. Okay, we've got Bill. Bill, who's been waiting patiently, I should say, from Laval, who has a sub pump as a secondary source issue. Bill, good morning.
Yes, good morning, guys. Love the show. You learned so much from Walter.
He's great, incredible. I tell you. I vouch for him.
He is. Yeah, so my question is, my home is it's less than 10 years old, and I don't have a secondary sump pump. I just have the plug-in, a regular sump pump in the basement, and my driveway does slope down. How important is it to have that secondary battery-powered sump pump? And who would I call, a plumber for this?
Okay, that's a great question. The secondary pump, first of all, there's many ways to answer this question, but how often does your present sump pump kick in?
Well, I don't know, really. It's just I never get flooded, so I guess it's working.
Okay, but I mean, in the spring, you hear it working in the spring?
I don't hear it at all, to be honest with you. It's because it's down in the basement, in the closet space somewhere, okay. And it's very quiet, so I don't really hear it. It's just I'm worried about in case there's a power failure during a heavy storm.
Hmm. So regardless, you know, it's almost a prerequisite to have an oil battery power pump. In general, for many reasons, it have a lot of advantages. The number one advantage is the capacity to alert you when your primary pump stops working. So typically, this is not, it doesn't kick in only when the power is out. What you do is you set the floater higher than the original floater. So when the water gets to the battery-powered pump floater, that's when it kicks in. And when it kicks in, there's an alarm. And if you buy the smart system, it will actually notify you on your phone that your secondary system or your emergency backup system is working. So if you're at work, you can rush home, you know, or call a plumber and so on and so forth. So that's number one. And you don't, because even if it's not a storm, there's no way for you to know when the primary sump pump is going to fail, right? It's been working for many years. You don't know what year, what months, and what have you. It's not like there's an expiry date on it. So to have it is extremely important. Now, one word of caution is in stretched out blackouts, it does have a shelf time of battery. So 6 hours, 6 to 9 hours, depending on the brand, is where it's going to take you. After that, you're kind of on your own. So if you really want to if you want protected from every possible scenario, then If you have a generator, obviously that will kick in and so on and so forth. But as a battery powered, it's a great source in case of emergency. It will take you 6 to 9 hours if you don't have power. But that's pretty much the best that you can go with. Do not go with the water-powered or the gravity-powered ones because they do not extract as much water, especially if you have a heavy rainfall.
Bill, does that help you?
Yeah, it helps me a lot. And can I just ask you, does your company provide these services?
We can. I mean, what you can also do, Bill, is if you have plumbers in your area, that's pretty much their playground. So someone close by, a family plumber or a regular plumber that you work with, that will be probably your best place to start with.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
All right.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you. We'll get to some more calls in a minute. I can see there we've got Rose, William, and Andrew waiting. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. Walter Assey and Joanne Brackus with you here on this home improvement extravaganza. You know, the microphone should stay on during these commercial breaks because we do talk about a whole lot of things.
That's true.
Some of them not fit for radio, but we're back with fit for radio topics. And we've got so many calls coming in. Reminder, 514-790-0800 is the phone line and the text line. Let's see who's been waiting here longest. Ooh, I think I have Andrea here from Saint-Lambert. And Andrea has a question about bain magique. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Andrea. Take it away.
Okay. Good morning. I'm a bit concerned about my shower curtain, which was recently purchased, the rods. And someone helped me put them up onto a bain magique bathtub, which is an overlay of my old bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
The rods keep falling down, okay? So what I was wondering, if it's put in, installed permanently, would it end up being cracking the actual plasticization of the bain magique material?
The bain magique material, you have two types. You have the one that glues right on the old material, and then you have one that have some type of a spacing, meaning if you press on it, there's like it have a give to it. Do you know which one that you installed?
I think it's probably the one that you just described, because it
didn't describe both. So
it didn't take very long for them to install it.
Okay, there are two types. So the one that have a give to it is a bit more. It's a bit more finicky, if you wish, because if you were to drive a screw in it, number one, you want to ensure the screw is long enough to go through to the other panel, to the wall, to screw properly. Number two, you want to drive the screwdriver or your drill extremely slowly not to crack the material. But in both cases, it's doable as long as you cock it afterwards just to ensure that there's no water that can go into this area. Because it will be a place where water could trickle through, if not.
Biggest concern is?
Now, the only good thing for you, it's high up, so the water technically should not get to it. So if you install it higher than the faucet, then you're good. But in the case where, you know, you spray by mistake, you're cleaning the shower, you want to just make sure that this is properly cocked.
Okay. I've got that written down.
Okay, thank you for the call, Andrea.
Thank you very much.
Great Saturday. William has been waiting patiently on the line. And William has a question about, oh, this one's pesky. An oil stain on the driveway. Good morning, William.
Yeah, good morning.
Take it away.
good morning, Walter.
Good morning, William.
Okay, so during the winter, the drain plug of my car was leaking a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't notice it with the snow. So now I have some oil stains on the asphalt of the driveway. Can I paint over that with something, or do I have to replace the asphalt?
No, you don't have to paint or replace the asphalt. I'm going to give you one product, and so far the only place I was able to locate it was Canadian Tire. It's called Oil Lift. Okay. So it's a cleaning product, and what that does is you have to mix it with water. Just follow the instructions of what the mix exactly is. you have to, and you put it in the area where you have the oil stain. There is a dwell time. After the dwell time, you have to use a brush and scrub it. And then you wash it or pressure wash it, whatever you like. And then the oil stain will magically disappear.
Okay, that's great. Okay, oil lift. Okay,
I'll look for that. Get it entire. Don't even bother going to other hardware stores. I tried.
Okay,
I don't know why it's only Canadian Tire that have it, but it's a great, great, great product.
So painting is a no-no.
I mean, it's you don't need the problem with painting is it's gonna fade away, and I mean, usually you don't want to paint asphalt. What you want to do is maybe put a sealer on it that have a color, like those black sealers, right? But you don't need to do that, because when you're gonna do that where the stain is, well, it's gonna only get darker. So unless you do the whole driveway, you're really not doing yourself any favor.
Okay, William.
Just get rid of the stain.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call, William. We have Rose now, who's been waiting patiently. Good morning, Rose. How are you?
Good morning to you. I have a problem with an LG fridge. It's a two doors, the French doors, with a water dispenser. What I find, it's a two-year-old. It was brand new. The water dispenser, the water comes out, and when you taste it, and it has an aftertaste. It's the same thing with the ice cubes. Now, LG came to change the filter box because it wasn't closing at the time, and they changed everything. So I thought afterwards that the water was going to be good. I haven't been able to drink the water from the fountain at all. Now, I drained it quite a few times for about 2-3 gallons. It's still the same problem. They tell me I have to put a filter for my water. Now, when I drink the water from the sink, from the tap, there's absolutely no aftertaste, nothing. So what would be the problem?
Could be many things, but you said you replaced the filters, right?
Yes.
Okay. The drain line that was installed for the water, is it copper or is it plastic?
I don't know. I've been in this condo for the past 2 years. Everything was done new then. So I suppose they are up to standards.
So, I mean, look, in certain cases, that aftertaste could be the PVC pipe. If the water sits in the line for a while, that's what happens. If it's a copper pipe, it's less likely. The other thing would be the hardness of the water, right, itself. So if you are in an area where you have a certain hardness of the water, there is an aftertaste. We can eliminate that because of the fact that you said from the faucet you don't smell it or you don't taste it, but in the line you do. So it's more likely the hose itself or the pipe that is channeling the water that's giving you that aftertaste. Because, I mean, my first intuition was to ask about the filter itself, but you're saying that you've replaced it, so I don't think it's coming from the filter. What you could do is one of two things. Number one is install a water filtration system from the source, so the whole apartment would have a filtered water, or take that water and put it in a Brita type of a system and then taste it again to see if that's really the issue.
Okay, but if I have to have some service done, should I do it through LG or get a plumber?
LG because for one reason. Number one, or a plumber that understands the LG systems, because each fridge have a manufacturer's specification for the water line for the fridge. So you want to ensure that you are within those parameters so you do not void your warranty.
Okay, do you know the company Oxibo?
I've seen their name somewhere, yes.
They were recommended to me by LG.
Okay.
So I suppose they work with LG products.
Yeah, if they're recommended by LG, they're probably one of their service providers or installers. Yeah, that's pretty much, I mean, that would be the best place to start with. See if it's the line itself that you could change, if it is compatible with the fridge.
I like the idea of filtering it through the Brita water filter just to be sure.
Yeah, that's where you start to see if it's really from the pipe itself the issue rather than
the water.
Yeah.
Rose, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
All right, have a great day. Okay, 514-790-0800 is the phone number for the text line and for the phone line. Maria's waiting patiently. We'll get to her. All right, welcome back. 514-790-0800 is the text line and the phone line. Maria has been waiting very patiently as well. Maria is on the line with a question about your favorite, Walter. It's the thing that scares you the most, mold. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're okay. Good. Take it away.
Okay. I'm just letting you know that I have my balcony attached to the house. And the we had styrofoam. It was removed against the outside wall, and then that's where we saw that there was mold. So it's black mold, and I'm very concerned about the health issue here.
So where did you find the mold?
When we removed the there was a pink styrofoam, which when we bought the house, it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we removed the styrofoam, we found the mold along the outside wall and the steps, you know, coming onto the balcony.
The outside wall, meaning what? The outside wall is made out of what? Brick, stone,
parking? It's stone, I guess.
Okay, so you found the mold on the stone?
The cement, it's called the canteen or the cold room, as you call it.
Okay. But the mold, you found it from the outside or the inside of the home? That's what I wanted
to know. Inside.
Inside. Okay,
yeah.
So it's in the cold room.
Yes, in the cold room.
Okay. Now, the canteen, is it made out of concrete inside or it's finished with drywall?
No, it's concrete. Once we remove the styrofoam, it's all concrete.
Okay. Does it have cross-ventilation vents?
No.
Okay. So, I mean, the mold isn't...
I called the Système Sous-Sol there.
Yeah.
And they want to put in a sub pump. I don't know. It's going to cost me like $10,000. And I said, oh, my God, no.
Okay. Before we go into the sump pump situation, we have to understand why you have mold. And the sump pump is not one of the reasons you have mold. If anything, the sump pump is made really for to take care of the water underneath the slab. So if you don't have that problem, you're paying for no good reason. So we have to be very careful with going straight at the source. Now, a cold room should have cross ventilation. Okay, air should circulate. I mean, as an invention, it was not a very bright invention, and we see less of it now in new construction. Because, you know, technically, it's not really a very practical room to have. When I say cross-ventilation, I mean you have to have two vents in diagonal from each other so the air can circulate. And you cannot interfere with the concrete, meaning you should not be putting, like you said, you had styrofoam, because that creates condensation between the cement and the styrofoam, and then that's how you have the mold spores. So number one, you need to decontaminate, disinfect, sanitize, HEPA vacuum the cold room. Number two, if you are keeping it a cold room, it has to stay cold. So no insulation, and you add cross-ventilation. So in the winter, it's going to be really, really cold because you're not supposed to block it in the winter either. To counter-intense that, what you do is you ensure that you have an insulated door between the cold room and the home so you don't transfer the cold to your basement. Okay? Now, if your intention is to transform it into a regular room, then it's a completely different story. So now you want to insulate vapor barrier, drywall, you put a humidistat inside, you ensure that there's air circulation, so you treat it like any other room in the home. So it's the exact opposite. If it's a cold room, it has to be naked and bare, nothing on it. If it's a finished room, you have to go all out, including a humidistat and air circulation.
Maria, is that good for you?
Humidistat?
Yeah, so you want to regulate, because your biggest enemy in a cold room is the humidity. So you want to make sure that that is regulated. And any room needs air current. As a matter of fact, that's why we say do not cluster rooms, do not overbear them, do not put furniture close to walls, because any time you don't have that air circulation, mold will grow.
Yeah.
So same applies to a cold room. I'm not sure your sump pump story is what you need.
I don't think so. I didn't feel good about that at all.
I mean, you might need it for reasons that they found fit.
No, if there was water infiltration, like continuous water infiltration, I could understand, but there isn't.
Yeah.
Like, all I'm concerned now is to remove that ugly mold.
And yeah.
Can you recommend somebody that can do that?
I mean, we do that. A lot of decontamination companies do that.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to be done is the IICRC protocol or the Clean Trust protocol is applied. So you have to install negative air machines, containment zones, exit chambers, positive HEPA positive air intake. Then you get rid of the mold, you sanitize. You apply biocides, you HEPA vacuum, you damp clean the biocide residue, and then you do a second HEPA app, and then ambient air shock, and then you're good to go.
Okay, thank you for that, Maria. We've got Catherine on the line. Oh, no, we don't have Catherine on the line. Daria told me we don't have Catherine on the line, but I do have a question for you, Walter, from Michel from Brossard. He says, good morning. Can acrylic stucco be applied over exterior basement wall parging, or is it better to paint it?
It is better to paint it because that's an area that's prone to have a lot of snow accumulations and salt and all different things. So that will rot away and decay much faster than a paint on a foundation. So I would advise against it.
All right. I hope that helps you out. That is Michel or Mikael. Maybe I'm reading that wrong from Gassar. Walter, that does it for today's show. Ottawa, hello, Montreal, Ottawa. Next stop, are we taking over the world? I said it before, there's Pitbull who calls himself Mr. Worldwide. That's you, slowly and surely. Wow. The Mr. Worldwide of home improvement. Again, president of Renovco. We'll see you here again next Saturday.
Absolutely, looking forward.
Have a fantastic Saturday to everyone in Montreal and to everyone in Ottawa. Take care. Time now for your CTV News Update.